Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Reveille, reveille, donks. Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
Oh, yeah. It's Friday. It's Morning Combat. It's back. The only combat sports show willing to televise an ongoing editorial divorce, if you will call that. I'm Brian Campbell, the beige one. There's my co-host, Luke Thomas. Friday, March 25th, 2022. Luke, you're under the weather here, so thank you for gutting it out, MJ flu game style. But you're home, you're safe, I assume.
Yeah, I'm all right. By the way, that was a very low T intro. I was waiting for the Pepe Le Pew kind of thing. But yes, everyone's asking, do you have the Rona? Well, I don't know because I've taken three tests since I've gotten home: two rapid, one PCR. They've all been negative. But my wife thinks that I went to like the Big Lots of COVID testing and that the testing was bullshit. So I should go to this other clinic, which I'm going to after the show today. If I test positive, I'll let you know. But huh?
You ever shop at Savers, Luke?
We don't quite have Savers this far south in the country, even though we're
not. Savers is like if Goodwill slept with a member of the Target family, and even though the Target family doesn't recognize them as legitimate department stores, they're like, all right, they're family now. So we, you know, that's Savers, Luke.
Yeah, that's like Big Lots, you know, around these parts. Yeah. So I'm all right. I'm just tired. That's it, really.
Okay. All right. All right, Luke. We promised, though, a great show for you today from Morning Combat, this show that wins all the awards, and there ain't nothing like it, right, for good or for better or for worse. Please like this video. Please subscribe it, because nobody quite sets up the weekend like we do. UFC Fight Night, Showtime Championship Boxing, 1X. We got a lot to chat on today to set things up. We'll get some picks, get some odds. Maybe a laugh or two. We'll see what happens here. But Luke Thomas has asked permission to editorially promiscuate outside of the MK bed, and I've yet to decide my thoughts on that.
Right. I don't know. I'm being dead serious. I honestly don't know what you're talking about.
Wow. I hope I get to keep Mikey in the divorce as well. Is the only thing I got to say about that. Please, Showtime, the label, the great label that pays us. We did have a very productive couple days down in Fort Lauderdale at the CBS Sports office with our folks from Showtime. A lot of great stuff to come from that. But if you want 30 days of Showtime, this weekend is another great example of why you should. Showtime Championship Boxing back in a big way on Saturday night with Tim Zhu's U.S. debut. Get 30 free days right now on Showtime.com. All the Bellator you can handle just in time for the Grand Prix tournament kickoff at Bantamweight. McKee Pitbull, 2 April 15th. You're going to need this leader in combat sports. They call it Showtime. We call it home, okay? And we must protect this house. Yes, so please try that shit out or pound the sand reverse. MK merch, I got a lot of it on here. And you can go to morningcombat.store right now to get your MK Tube t-shirts if you're into that gross. By the way, Luke Thomas today on our pre-show was like, you know, because Luke, you and I do have non-negotiables in life, as anyone would. Right?
Of course.
I'm like, I can't wear this shirt in public. I can't represent that. You're like, yo, I'll wear it at the splash pad right now.
Yeah, I will literally wear that at the splash pad. It's not going to be open this weekend because it's going to be in the 50s, but in the 40s. But yes, I would wear this without even the slightest degree of hesitation.
All right. Well, that's morningcombat.store where, you know, nobody got merch like us. So check that out.
You see, when you wear shirts from the band Dying Fetus where they're literally curb stomping people, you know, and talking about, you know, eating their entrails, yeah. Wearing a shirt that says Morning Combat that kind of looks like the Pornhub thing is frankly a step up towards being classier. So it would be an improvement.
All right. There you go. We've got a lot of great merch there, by the way. The Factory Town MMA line, the Dead Luke line, the tie-dye line. So check all that out. All that and then some. Tall, pale, and handsome. It's your boy BC back at it with LT. And we want to remind you of I don't know, our favorite partner in the game right now, Luke, as you can see in this glorious bottle. This is what gets me revved up to start the day, Luke. This is how I stay fired the hell up. It's our friends at Athletic Greens.
Well, I got to tell you, BC, I didn't take my Athletic Greens when I was in Florida, and then I came back sick. Is it a coincidence? I don't know, but it certainly caught my attention. And I got to tell you that I love it. Tastes great. It doesn't taste like it's super healthy. It's got like a mild tropical taste, and I look forward to taking it every morning. I should have had it when I was at work.
And here's the maintenance you need every morning. One delicious scoop of Athletic Greens into your water, your beverage of choice, and you'll be absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, adaptogens. They help you start your day right. Now, if you're a guy like me who doesn't know what any of those words mean, start your day clean. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Eat clean, bro, is a thing, apparently. But, Luke, however you start your day, that's usually how you end it, Luke. That's probably why I pass out all the time watching bad movies, you know?
Yeah, I understand. And listen, it's what's in this, as you indicated, it's a blend of things that help you with your gut health, nervous system, immune system, right? Energy, recovery, focus, aging, all that stuff.
Yeah, and you can travel with it too, which is very easy. So you talk about being lifestyle friendly, easy. Whether you eat paleo, keto, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, look, we all are making some type of concessions to stay healthy here. This contains less than 1 gram of sugar. No GMOs or no nasty chemicals or really artificial anything. That's the thing at the end of the day. It tastes good and it feels good.
It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit.
Or cold vape, depending on your personality. But taking Athletic Greens is a small micro habit that has big benefits. It's one thing you can do every single day to take great care. Look, I don't always eat right, but I do start my day right thanks to AG1.
And by the way, I did see him take it when we were in Florida every single day. So he was living his values. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews and is trusted by leading health experts such as Tim Ferriss and Michael Gervais.
Damn right. And right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season that you can acquire by traveling like Luke did. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. There's no need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health, which you want to be around a while or not. That's really what I got to ask you.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/morningcombat.
And that's, of course, combat with a K, athleticgreens.com/morningcombat to take ownership over your health and pick up some ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Biatch.
There it is.
There.
I was wondering, how are you doing, BC? You started all very low T. Are you all right? Is there?
You know, I'm all kinds of exhausted, Luke. Okay, but yeah. You know, I'm gonna persevere because.
Bro, traveling in your 40s is nothing like traveling in your 20s. It's not even close.
Third week in a row for me, but I ain't complaining about it, Luke. Because at the end of the day, it's what it takes. You know what I mean? It's what it takes to be great, Luke. Okay.
You have to go get communicable diseases in the Sunshine State.
You got, you know, you want to hoist those awards at the end of the day. You want to cash those checks. You got to get in that airplane. You got to go fight with your co-host. You got to turn things around, Luke. That's what we did. Thank you, Athletic Greens, as well. That's about it. I'm not here to sell you anything more. I'm just here to sell you a good time and a good setup for the weekend to come. And we begin UFC Fight Night, Las Vegas. I think it's Las Vegas. We back at the damn Apex? I think we are.
No. This is a special one. Remember, they're in Columbus, Ohio. Matt Brown is on this main card. Yeah.
It's Friday, dead wrong territory. Let me take that, Al. Columbus, Ohio in the Nationwide Arena is your home on Saturday. We talked during storylines about this big heavyweight bout, not initially, set to be the main event, but it got bumped up. They're going to go five rounds, and there is so much at stake when Curtis Blaydes and Chris Daukaus touch gloves here. In terms of obvious future title contention, and placement, you know, close or within the top five of this division, but in their own individual stories, having tasted an L here and there that has, been met in theory, especially the recent one by Chris Daukaus against Derek Lewis, to wake up and fix whatever needs to be fixed for that run at the top. Luke, as they are set to do this, and in my mind, potential crossroads fight, maybe, if Blaydes looks like he's going in that other direction. But the odds, Luke, and I get it. I know what the odds are meant to do. I know that they induce betting. But they are also great at what they do for a reason. And these odds makers right now, let's look at our friends from DraftKings. Plus 340, Chris Daukaus is your underdog. Minus 450, Curtis Blaydes, your betting favorite. Luke, at the end of the day, I do believe Curtis Blaydes should be the betting favorite. I don't think it should be that wide, though. I really don't at all.
Yeah, I understand the point there. Blaydes been knocked out, granted, by a dominant, experienced puncher in Derek Lewis the way that he was. And, of course, you know, I don't think anybody can take Francis's punches, right? I mean, Gon had to roll with him and then just not take them. But you can't just eat them and then survive. Everyone takes an L when they do that. So I agree with you. I mean, there's no denying that Blaydes has done. This is the difference between this fight, right? If Daukaus beats Blaydes, Daukaus will have done something in his heavyweight career that he has not done yet. He has not beaten somebody this good. If Blaydes wins, it's very important and valuable, but it would not be anything new. Now, he could show us new things, but I mean, beating Chris Daukaus in that way would not necessarily tell us anything new or represent a brand new milestone for Curtis Blaydes. So I think that explains some of the differences there. But I agree with you, even though he didn't have a great performance also, Chris Daukaus, against Derek Lewis, you know, you look at his numbers, BC, he lands 7.71 strikes per minute. I mean, that's like, I think there might be five or less fighters who have a higher strikes landed per minute in all of the UFC. So when he is out there dealing, it is quite a storm. The question is, of course, can he do that?
Yeah, and I don't want to be naive to the reasons why Blaydes could be this big of a betting favorite. And let's be honest, he's, you know, arguably among the most well-rounded fighters this division's seen in a while. Now, look, I think the real question, obviously, and we talked about it on Wednesday, is Blaydes' striking going to ever level out a bit and get to that next level? Not level out, excuse me. You know, just keep climbing and round out is really what I'm trying to say, to get closer to the strengths he has on the ground and his tendency to lean into those strengths. He's got to answer that. But I think he's a better class fighter than Chris Daukaus. He certainly has the experience factor. He certainly only loses to the very elite. And when he has felt comfortable, he has shown traces of offensive ability. I mean, look what he did over him. I mean, we forget that sometimes, long time ago.
Brutal.
But brutal, where, you know, he can deliver. So, yes, I like him as the favorite. But if he decides to stand and trade with Chris Daukaus, that's still pairing together Blaydes' biggest vulnerability mixed with Daukaus' biggest advantage. Mm-hmm. So, Luke, strategy-wise, intention, whether you want to look well-rounded or not, if you're Curtis Blaydes, and maybe this is why the betting odds are this wide, dude, you're going to rinse and repeat and try to just drag this guy and smear him all over that canvas, all over the place, on the ground, Luke, from start to finish.
There's just no denying. I mean, yes, I obviously think that we talked about this on Wednesday. We want to see some development from Curtis Blaydes, especially if he wants to be able to beat the kind of guys that have so far remained a little bit ahead of him in the division. But, you know, the lopsided nature of this bout is crazy. Now, here's a good stat for Chris Daukaus. What's his takedown defense rate in the UFC overall through five fights or whatever it is? It's 100%. It's pretty great. Here's the problem. He's only had to defend one takedown, and it came from Alexei Oleinik. This is what I mean. He's never even wrapped up with anyone even close to the level of Curtis Blaydes as it refers to the ground game. listen to this number. When was the last time you heard a heavyweight with this number? Takedowns average per 15 minutes. And by the way, Chris Daukaus has only been to the second round one time in his UFC run. So like a third round would be totally new territory. So per 15 minutes, and this is a 25-minute bout, Curtis Blaydes averages 6.27 takedowns landed. So he's basically good for at least two a round as it continues. Dude, that is nuts. That is extremely high for heavyweight. This really tells you where it's going to go. We just told you about Chris Daukaus' number striking. When he is out there dealing, he doesn't have all stoppage wins in the UFC, including his own loss, I suppose. We had stoppage loss, but all of his wins have come by stoppage and on the feet KO or TKO, right? I believe that's correct. I'll verify here. Yeah, I think that's right. Mm-hmm. So the point I'm trying to make here is it is utterly lopsided. On the one hand, Chris Daukaus is a very active, competitive striker in that heavyweight division and has some great wins behind him. On the other side, he is totally untested against someone like Curtis Blaydes, and even Curtis Blaydes is something, as it relates to the wrestling anyway, he's something unique, BC, because even the other guys in this division who could wrestle, your DCs, your Stipes, they still kind of mixed it up a little bit. Curtis Blaydes is just kind of, I'm not going to say one-sided, but pretty close to it, pretty close to it, right? That's where the best offense he gets comes from by a mile. Like that, it really, you're talking about the Overeem win. Where did that happen? Elbows on the ground. That's where it happened. That's where he does his best work. And so really, can you keep it on the feet or can you not? That is the only question here that seems to matter.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be one of those upon examination, even with induced betting and even with Vegas tending to be right in these situations, it could very well end up this way, a five-round clean sweep, you know, ground-dominant victory or a late stoppage if he can gas Daukaus out. But, Luke, we did talk Wednesday storylines related to Blaydes' arc and his, to quote a phrase, upper bound limits, and I was a little bit harsh because, Luke, although the losses have only come to those super elite, and although I've been believing in Blaydes', you know, title potential for a long time, early even, he has a self-destruct button. I mean, everybody does, Luke. Now, but that self-destruct button isn't as easy to find as, hey, Daukaus, go out there and stand with him for 2 minutes, throw a couple combinations, and you get the knockout win. It's not that easy. There's going to be takedown attempts. There's going to be, you know, Blaydes can handle himself a bit on the feet. But if Daukaus digs deeper, Luke, where is not the self-destruct button, but the strategy he can lean into that could open up, you know, a turn in the momentum of this fight in his direction?
Two things have kind of stood out with Curtis Blaydes a little bit, right? So the numbers with him, what did I tell you before? He lands 6.27. I mean, I just can't tell you. That is extremely high for any weight class, by the way. The fact that he's doing it at heavyweight is truly remarkable. Here's the one knock on that. Takedown accuracy, not that low. It's 53%. Takedown defense, 33%. There's a couple of things I think Chris Daukaus could do. One is you got to stay off the fence. I mean, just matter-of-factly, if you're up against the fence line, that is going to... I'm not saying he can't win if he gets put there routinely, BC, but you know as well as I do, if you're up against the fence while winning is possible, it is going to be a lot harder. Again, you have to expect that some of that might happen, but you got to really have a sense of urgency about creating separation, getting off the fence line, and then resetting back to the center. Taking that fight at the center of the cage will be critical for a guy like him. By the way, I think backing up Blaydes a little bit, putting a jab in his face, feinting, faking, stuffing the takedown in the middle, even threatening one of his own, to be honest with you, if he can manage that. Now, that gets a little bit dicey depending on your ability, but sometimes we've seen that that actually can be a pretty powerful and impactful deterrent. But the other one is, look at some of the times that a guy like Ngannou has had some success with him. Or Derek Lewis caught him coming in. Of course, that's something you could do, but that's a little risky because if you miss, if Derek Lewis had missed on that punch, and Blaydes gets under it, he's getting taken down. So there's, you know, it's harder to do than it might look. You have to thread a bit of a needle. But if Curtis goes for a double leg that you can stuff and turn or a single leg, I've noticed that like Francis had a ton of success hammer fisting him into either getting him to let go or to make the attempt pointless to the, you know, to where he was forced to just like completely abandon the effort. And, you know, obviously Francis hits really hard, so it's going to be somewhat unique, but it really was quite effective in swelling up the eyes of Curtis. I would say that, like, obviously first order takedown defense is going to be important here, But if this keeps going a little bit and he has to kind of wrestle through his balance a little bit, hammering Curtis, elbows, hammer fists, creating separation, throwing a knee up the middle, things to really cause him problems on these takedown attempts. Because what do we do? What do we talk about all the time, BC, when we have these come forward strikers that just never stop pressuring forward? That will break a lot of guys. But for the better fighters, they're able to use that pressure against them by making them run into traps that they can set or otherwise meaningfully find offense. I think Chris Daukaus is going to have to wrestle pretty hard here, but he's got to find punishment in those transition positions as well and keep the fight at the center.
Yeah, I think that's well said. You do have to make them pay that toll for getting close to you or threatening it to, in this case, Blades with the takedowns. But it's interesting here because what has made Chris Daukaus jump off the screen, I do fear there's some fool's gold element. Meaning, look, I think Chris Daukaus has certainly with his hands, the punching, the variety of elbow strikes right there, the speed, the combos. You know, I want to lump him, Luke, in that group with Tom Aspinall, Tai Tuivasa, this next generation of guys who seem to have a more advanced skill set earlier in their career than heavyweights of heavyweight generations of past have had. Meaning, when Chris Daukaus has looked the best on his rise, sometimes though, Luke, he's in there with, you know, like you fall off a cliff. Pretty quickly in the heavyweight rankings historically, and even now, even though it's been reshuffled nicely to where, you know, it's the elite and then it's sort of everybody else. And Chris Daukaus can lure the everybody else's into firefights early, in which his advantage and speed and technique and his approach just lights them up and quickly the fight's over. And I think he surprised a bunch of guys in that regard. Can that work against the very elite level, Luke? You know, as much as like the Derek Lewis loss was a sobering sort of early ceiling moment. Okay, first L on this level. Let me go back to the lab and figure it out. Do you think he has the style and enough of a well-rounded game, meaning Daukaus, to be able to do this on this level against someone who's going to have the same level of technique of him and have the experience needing to adapt in these key situations?
I don't know. That's why this fight is important. It will tell us the answer to that. What I do think is, let's assume for a second he's taking into this fight what we already know for him to have. Maybe not necessarily a whole lot new, right? Here's another number I want to give you for Curtis Blades. Curtis Blades only absorbs 1.65 strikes per minute. Why do I think that really attacking the level change, if it leads to a takedown, or attacking the, you know, someone's on a single and he's moving you to off balance. Yes, you have to wrestle through that first, but if you can find a safe or reasonably safe attacking position, you have to go for it. It's not that I think Curtis Blades is not tough. I think he's very tough. But what I also think is he can be, over the course of a fight, while he is relentless with the takedown, and he is very good at not taking damage, if you can score damage on him, I think you saw this in the Volkov fight too, it can deter him for long periods of time from going, relatively speaking, from going back to that takedown. He can be a little bit deterred by it, and he can second guess himself. And I think that's going to be the priority. If it's just Curtis Blades, as we understand him, against Chris Daukaus, as we understand him early on, that's a fight Curtis Blades, again, in theory, should not lose. But if you can get him hurt a little bit, and now he has to respect any kind of entry, any kind of level change, any kind of wrapping up scenario, now he'll do it a little bit less, and he might do it a little bit more cautiously, meaning to say that it's not set up quite as well, or he doesn't get as deep every time. That, I think, is a very winnable fight for Chris Daukaus. To your point, can he do that? I don't know. We're going to have to see. But I think that is what's really going to be necessary, because early on, before he's been deterred or affected, he is, and even through the middle parts of a round too, the middle parts of a three-round fight anyway, he's relentless. He is all over it. But he can be deterred by some of the better guys who can place good damage on him. It does affect him.
I think he's got to hope that in Daukaus that he can come out and his hand game is at another level than Blades'. And that's going to have to be a big part of this, right? How each other's weaknesses matches up with the strengths of the other one. And I think in theory, it's always like, well, how do you lure somebody into a standing fight or maybe even a brawl in which, you know, you can again argue in this matchup that Daukaus will have those same advantages. It's hurting him, of course. But Luke, do you think Blades getting hurt early with punches leads to a fight or flight ending, meaning stand and fight off the threat or go even more desperate in terms of takedown only approach to this?
That will depend on Chris Daukaus, right? let's say he can meaningfully stop a couple of takedowns. He gets one, but he gets up, right? So that one of them counts, and he's in there, and he's competitive with it. Then he has to decide, how do I want to pursue this? Because just deterring Curtis Blaydes is not going to win you the fight, because it's not going to stop him. It will deter him a little bit, but it won't ultimately prevent him from trying. And if he's still got enough of a good gas tank and everything else, which also could be somewhat questioned here depending on how much he has to work, but you get the idea. That's not going to win the fight by itself. There has to be another offensive component behind it, and that's where I think he has to pressure Blaydes into making mistakes. When he can, how did Derek Lewis find that uppercut? It's because he timed it. He timed it. He got timed because he was shooting from way outside and he didn't set it up properly. That is a thing that quite literally we have seen works. It's hard to do, and only the better ones can really do it, but it does have an effect. It's noteworthy. It's going to be up to him to do that. Now, of course, there should be noted Derek Lewis did that on the back foot a little bit, not the same kind of thing. I don't think Chris Daukaus is necessarily going to be, like, I would argue Derek Lewis is probably going to be a lot better of a counter puncher than Chris Daukaus is. He's a little bit more of a trap setter, kind of sneaky in that way. Chris Daukaus is more of a come forward kind of heavyweight. And so I think that's what he's going to eventually have. Dude, just think about it. Like, under what conditions does Chris Daukaus win? He has to bring that into this fight, but I don't think you can do that unless you have meaningfully put Curtis Blaydes on the mental and physical back foot. Yes. We got to see him do that.
And then within his ground defense, Daukaus, it's not just preventing the takedown. It's being able to, to your best effort, cancel out the ground and pound attempts of Blaydes and make Great it a no-sum, no-win situation on these takedowns. That's going to be a big part of it, as will, when you're making a jump like this, if you're Daukaus, you're going to have to potentially show the five-round cardio. You're going to have to be able to, you're going to have to show a lot. And that's why the stakes are this high. Luke, the heavyweight iceberg is clearly broken into two in the past 2 months, and the elite one is going that way, and Aspinall and Tuivasa are on there, and a guy like Blaydes tends to jump back and forth often between the two, but if Chris Daukaus wants to join those guys on that one, you got to win this fight, and this would be a monster win in his overall arc. Luke, does he do it? What does this look like? Who wins and why?
I'm going to say Curtis Blaydes. Again, I just feel like I like Chris Daukaus' game. But that's a tough two-fight stretch. The Derek Lewis back-to-back with Curtis Blaydes, you're asking a lot from a heavyweight to do that. And so while I recognize that Curtis Blaydes himself, obviously he rebounded it when he fought Rozenstruik, but, he can be beaten. He is not some unstoppable force in all ways. But I think he's much more battle-tested. He's beaten much better guys than Chris Daukaus has. He's been around a lot longer. He should win this. In fact, it'd be, it'd be somewhat surprising. Obviously, the odds are what they are. But it'd be a little bit surprising if Daukaus won and Blaydes lost. This is a fight Blaydes absolutely should win. So we'll see what happens. But I like Curtis here.
If you're Daukaus, you got to hope that things happen in threes. And these young heavyweights that are riding this momentum, that he's going to be a part of that. You nailed it perfectly. Is Blaydes capable of giving up this fight and losing it? You're damn right he is, unfortunately, but I don't think Daukaus is capable enough to make that happen. Mm. Will he eventually? It's still young in the process, and there's a lot from Chris Daukaus that I have loved, Luke, offensively, no doubt. I tend to believe there's a fighter in there coming out of Philly. His brother's a UFC fighter. Like, I tend to believe that intangible-wise, there's, he's got a ceiling to show us a lot. It just may be wrong matchup at wrong time. Now, we've both been wrong on some picks lately, and that's the game right there. I mean, if you get it right all the time, you're probably living in Vegas. But give me Curtis Blaydes on the ground, man. Give me a fourth round stoppage, Luke. He's gonna gas on that tank. He's gonna pull the gas. He's gonna siphon it out. He might steal the catalytic converter too, Luke. I think he might do the full job on him.
He might change the alternator. Yeah, I'm with you. We're
I'm gonna change your oil. Yeah,
change your oil. But I will say this: if Chris Daukaus wins this fight, man, and wins it cleanly, like the judges didn't do some screw job or the ref didn't fuck it up or whatever, that's a big, big win for Chris Daukaus. So a huge opportunity in front of him for sure.
Hey, this card's good, man. We said that on Wednesday. I gotta say that again. Luke, co-main event: women's flyweights Joanne Wood, Nay Calder, versus Alexa Grasso, who we talked on Wednesday, seems to have a nice home here in the new division. She's still got to prove a little bit more, but it's a short ladder to the top for Valentina Shevchenko awaiting any viable contender. Grasso with the two straight wins over Ji-Young Kim and then Macy Barber being the big one there. She's won three of her last four. That extends five of seven. She's the fighter certainly rising against what has become the old battle axe here, Luke and Joanne Wood. The odds, though, have Grasso minus 255 under DraftKings as the favorite, plus 205 for Joanne Wood. How does this go any differently than three competitive rounds, but 30-27 Grasso, thanks to the boxing?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, okay, my first thought is, and my last thought is, this is a fight. I'm sorry, you may have said the odds. Did you read the odds?
Yes.
On this one? One more time for me, if you could.
Hell yeah, Luke. Plus 205, Joanne Wood, minus 255, Alexa Grasso.
Okay, I think that's about right. I actually think that's much, much more accurate. Here's the thing for me on these two. They're pretty similar in some certain dimensions. There's one height, 1 inch difference in height with Wood being a little bit taller. Grasso has a 1 inch reach advantage, but in that sense, they're basically the same height, same reach. So that's okay. But they're both orthodox fighters. Here's what stands out to me in all of this. Joanne Wood lands more at 6.71 strikes per minute, which is very high. She takes a lot at nearly 4.5, actually higher than 4.5. Alexa Grasso deals at almost 5 strikes per minute, which is a lot, and only absorbs 3.61. So she's a little bit more efficient with that. But the biggest difference to me that stands out is, one, Joanne Wood, my brain keeps saying Calder Wood, she might go for the takedown a little bit more. She does mix that in. She has 1.57 per 15 minutes. Grasso just 0.28. So that could be something that shows up, especially if Grasso is pumping that jab and it's landing and it's working, and Wood can't find a way to counteract it. Wood a little bit more, we should be noted, a little bit more of kickboxery, and then Grasso a little bit more pure boxing. Again, that's all relatively speaking. But the other part that stands out to me, BC, and this is the one I think will really matter in the end, Wood, striking defense, 52%. It's about normal, something like that. Grasso, 64%. Dude, that is very high. That's actually, rarely do I see someone have defense that high. I think she's going to be, I don't know how active she's going to be relative to what Wood does, because she can be active herself, but I think over time that a bit of a pace might get put on her that could deter her. And that if Wood can't find those counters, right, if that 64% holds up, that's going to deny her, and I think that will then push her to the takedown. And if she can't get the takedown, that's when the wheels might start coming off the bus a little bit.
Yeah, for me, it's not only that Wood is 34 and has lost 3 of 4, but I haven't seen a lot of life from her, Luke. Next level potential, you know, during some of these runs, even when she's fought the more elite foes available to her. If she does get the takedowns, I just don't see her being offensive enough to make that a difference, Luke. I think this fight will be on the feet longer than it'll be on the ground. And when it's on the feet, Grasso's footwork and combinations, she knows what she's doing there, Luke. It's going to take a different type of fighter to stop her momentum at this moment. So give me Grasso by decision. That's my lead pipe lock, rock solid, rock hard with emotion, like Jake Hager pick of the week, Luke. Three rounds.
That's your phoner
right there. Yeah. I'm gonna establish that. Luke, there's so many other fights to care about, but storyline-wise, this one looks like it's getting bumped up pretty high. 41-year-old Matt Brown coming home here to Ohio, and he'll be taking on Brian Barberina. Certainly, Luke, in a fight that screams, you know, fun and sloppy action and all that good stuff. But, dude, Matt Brown, 41, as I just mentioned, he may not be getting enough of this sort of Jim Miller victory tour that he's going on, this sort of, you know, guy who had his day, but look at the longevity, look at the toughness, look at the track record. And now you got Matt Brown saying in interviews this week, I'd like to sign a 5-fight deal after this one with the UFC and fight until I'm 46 and try to become the oldest fighter in the history to both win and appear. Luke, this is a little bit improbable, this second half turn for Matt Brown. Not that it's been super, it's not that this is, you know, it's impressive. It's not crazy impressive, right? But it's impressive to extend your career longer than we think you would or should or could. But don't you remember there were times where you're like, yeah, he should probably go away now, like action star bending through the wars. He just never stopped. I don't even want to say evolving, Luke. Are you seeing a Matt Brown that's evolved, or just a guy that hasn't let himself fall off yet because he's so damn tough?
No, I think you misdiagnosed it here a little bit, actually.
Yeah, tell me.
It is true that as you get older, improvement becomes more and more difficult, in part because you already know a lot and in part because your body won't let you. And there's just a lot of difficulties that, you know, if you're a peak bodybuilder, just imagine this, you know, it's easy to build the first 20 pounds of muscle, but like whatever your Olympia peak is, to get the last few pounds of that muscle, it takes years and years and years to get the very end. It's much harder to develop gains when you're at your genetic peak and potential than if you're at the beginning of it, right? That's why beginners can put on muscle like that. The point I'm trying to make here about Matt Brown, though, Matt Brown's a little bit different. People talk about his toughness and his cowboy grittiness and things like that, and they should, because they all stand out to you. Did you ever watch his season of The Enforcer, Matt, of The Ultimate Fighter? Matt Brown was like an enforcer on that season, where they wanted Matt Brown to fight all the people in the house that they hated, because it's like, oh, you fight Matt Brown, he's gonna fuck you up, man. Yeah, like they didn't necessarily present him to be like the best fighter, but they kind of presented him as the one, like the boogeyman. Like you know, if you're a reject on this show, you don't want to fight Matt Brown. Matt Brown will really hurt you, and that's been the reputation that followed. But I would humbly submit to everyone, if you really watch the tape on Matt Brown through the course of his career, here is what stands out to me. More than most fighters, he is a dedicated student of the game. He has remained extremely humble about his journey and has constantly invested in learning, 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 learning. He is a wealth of knowledge. If you talk to him, by the way, that's true as it relates to his... I should bring it up, but Louis Simmons, who is an icon in the strength sports world, he was the guy from this famous gym that's out in Ohio. He invented this thing called a reverse hyper. I have one. Matt Brown studied under him. And if you talk to Matt Brown about the conjugate periodization methods and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, Louis Simmons had a big hand in creating, you know, you'll learn that, like, this dude is invested in the academics of it, quite frankly. He is always trying to refine technique and what are all the dimensions of my game that I can get better. And he does it in ways that a lot of fighters don't. That's why I think he's still out here doing that, on top of the fact that he is a savage and he wants to compete in this.
I mean, he's a savage. And I didn't mean to, medium nog. The argument here of how he's done this, I just don't, I mean, you know, it's not like he was a striker and then, I just meant it was not like he, to save face, he became a wrestler just to linger.
Right.
Obviously, there's so many veteran tools and tricks, and he hasn't stopped learning. But, you know, you do remember when he got head kick KO'd by Cowboy Cerrone in 2016, that was 5 losses in 6 fights at the elite and, you know, sub elite level, still fighting one tough guy after another. It looked over at that point. He's 3-2 since, and that knockout of Diego Sanchez from a few years ago is among, you know, with the lead down driving elbow forearm is among the nastiest. We talk about the nastiest finishes, the most like angry, like Dan Henderson over Hector Lombard, just nasty finishes. Luke, that was certainly one of them. But do you think he can pull this off? The idea of, you know, he's already in win some, lose some mode. That's what you're like when you're veteran gatekeeper who's in there to test people, but you know what? You're still going to win some of them. Can he pull off another 5 fights, another 5 years of this, Luke?
Well, it's funny, you know, the Jim Miller thing is the right comparison, because he also is a big time student of the game, constantly working on stuff. There's a few guys that the UFC will let age gracefully. Have you noticed that? There's not. Yes. They don't do it for everyone, but they, you know, when they realize, okay, Jim Miller can't beat the best lightweights in the world right now. You know, he can't do it. It wouldn't work. And Matt Brown can't beat the best, what is he, welterweight at this point? He can't beat the best welterweights out there. It's not really in the cards. But fans like them. They are competitive with other people who have, you know, or who are under contract. And, you know, Brian Barberina is up and down, but he's experienced. This is not his first rodeo. Against those types, and, you know, and these are somewhat still relevant fights in a sense about where people are coming or going, right? Because Jim Miller just fought a guy making his UFC debut. That was a huge fight, right? For his opponent. Matt Brown is in this stage where he's still able to have these, like, really, you know, not super important fights, but he's able to have this old man tour, and it's because people love him. He is a hometown hero here, but also because he has kind of accepted, okay, if I can't fight the best, I'm not going to get out of the game. I still want to compete, and I want to keep getting better in sort of smaller ways maybe the UFC will let me do that. And for him and for Jim Miller and maybe a few other ones, they have agreed to that. It kind of works in limited circumstances. This is one of them.
And, you know, that does happen in other sports. Guys who for a season were, you know, the all-star level or just short of that, but then figure out how to get a role, you know, whether it's basketball or whatever, and can play that role. Mm-hmm. We just don't see that a lot in fighting. We don't see the old age gracefully and keep getting better. What Orlovsky's doing, what even what Diego Sanchez had done, his last little run there in the UFC, what Jim Miller's doing. I mean, I'm very impressed with this when you really look at what it takes to keep evolving and need to be that student with the physical grind, with the inevitable stretches of losing. Like, you know, I talk about that stretch where Brown lost a bunch. I don't want people to forget and only think of him as either an action fighter or a fun, tough old guy. And remember that his actual run, Luke, when he won 7 in a row and got as high as that Robbie Lawler fight that, you know, would have put him right there. He's a fucking good fighter, and he was nasty, and he was dangerous, and it was like that run. He got a decision win over Wonderboy in that stretch, but that was 4 straight finishes. Mike Swick, Jordan Mean, Mike Pyle, and Eric Silva leading into the Lawler title eliminator defeat, Luke. Don't forget that that guy could play in this league at that level, Luke.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you've seen guys who maybe were, you know, once on one of the starting lineups in football, sometimes kind of just finish out their career in special teams or, you know, sort of role players, and that's the way that it goes. Here's the thing. Is there a meaningful difference? And I think there is, but I want to ask you this. Is there a meaningful difference? To me, what Jim Miller and Matt Brown are doing is very similar. Arlovsky is also doing something similar to that, but it seems like the UFC uses Arlovsky as much more of a dedicated, like, you know, measuring opportunity for his opponents, whereas maybe Jim Miller's last fight was like that, but I don't feel like Miller and Brown have quite the same utility in their respective divisions.
True. No, that's true. It's different circumstances, yet all falls under the same halo. And you know what, Luke? If you go on a run, a little mini run with wins, they'll give you the step up opportunity that you're still looking for. You know, they'll level you out for you,
mm-hmm.
with although respecting you in the other ways of matchmaking. And let's not forget, Clay Guida's kind of in that category as well, Luke. Another guy I never would have guessed.
Yeah, a little bit. And you know, and again, what do all those people have in common? What do all of them have in common? Super crafty, especially Miller, especially Arlovsky, and especially Brown. Dude, they're not just veterans in the sense they've done a lot, and that entitles them to some measure of respect, although that's true as well. But dude, they've got a lot of tricks up their sleeve, and that's why they're still doing relevant MMA.
DraftKings has Brown and Barbarina both even here at -110. So it's a pick 'em at the end of the day, Luke. Barbarina younger, but you can get him hurt, Luke, and he's got some mileage on him. So I know you could be feeling a Matt Brown win here. I know it because I heard you say it this week.
Your audio cut out for the last sentence. What'd you say?
I said Matt Brown could win a knockout here, and I know that's a pick you like, Luke.
Yeah, Brian Barbarina takes a lot of punishment. Now, here's the thing. Barbarina's got he's got pretty good cardio, you know? And Matt Brown has, I'm sure, trained his ass off. But at his age, I have noticed he and Jim Miller, you know, it's fair to say that they're probably not the same kind of physical force that they once were in terms of their overall cardiovascular push. So there might be an opportunity for Barbarina to do something a little bit later in this fight if he can stay alive and keep moving and make Matt Brown work. But, you know, skill for skill, Matt Brown is way more skilled, I think, than Brian Barbarina. And I got to tell you, I like his chances of winning here a lot, especially in his hometown, which, you know, we talked about this all the time, how a lot of guys don't get to fight ever in front of their home cities. And, of course, Matt Brown's not headlining here. But when it rarely happens, we should still call it out. Good for Matt Brown that he gets an opportunity like this to fight in front of his own home city.
I remember he fought Eric Silva on that last fight of his you know, prime run win streak. And that was in, I think, Cincinnati. It was a Sunday night UFC fight night card. And the crowd went apeshit, Luke, when he got that finish. It was great to see. All right, Luke, we got to speed it up here. But this might be the best fight of the card. And it comes in the flyweight division. And maybe a potential title shot at stake as Askar Askarov and your boy Kai Kara France from the CKB life, Luke, who is rising following that stoppage of Cody Garbrandt. Luke, -425, Askarov is your favorite, +320. Now, Luke, there are, you know, you labeled me a Zabit super fan, and I'm going to tell you you're damn right. I love me some Askar Askarov, and you know that. But I would roll the dice on a +320 KK France every right. single day of this week, right. Luke. What are we doing there, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't quite like the main event. I don't think that's fair because I think Askarov can strike a lot more competitively with France or Cara France than what we've seen from, you know, what Blaydes might be able to show Chris Daukaus. I guess we'll have to see. But this is the one that I think will define the entire fight. So in this sense, this is what binds them. Right? Takedown average per 15 minutes for Askarov, 2.75. That is high. He's nearly good for a takedown around, and that means he's going to be trying for a lot more than that since his takedown accuracy is only 28%. So think about that for a second. He fails on 72% of his takedown attempts and still ends up at 2.75 takedowns per 15 minutes. That tells you he is on you like a dog on a bone, and that doesn't mean he's going to get every takedown, far from it, but you are going to have to fight this fucker off constantly. Kai Kara France is a much better striker than Askarov, although I think Askarov can strike respectably quite well, especially if he can mix in that takedown threat, right?
Well,
and
dude,
that might actually end up being the difference.
Let me just say this about Askarov, whether you look at him as a like one punch finisher or not, and he's not, his strikes are hard, his jabs, yes. his body shots, like He bites down on that, man. He goes after
100%. I'm just saying to you what really makes him come alive, and you saw this in a lot of his fights, he can scramble well. He doesn't get tired, to your point. He actually has some power in his strikes, and when he can strike through scrambles, and he can obviously, you know, he's good at taking the back. He's good at, you know, maintaining top position at times. He just is a workhorse through many more dimensions of the game. Kai Kara France, I'm not saying if it's strike, he can't win. That's not true. But it's going to be a lot truer for him that if he's not striking, BC, that's going to be a way harder fight for him to win. And when I say striking, I just mean at range. That's all.
A lot of our listeners always reach out after we talk about Askarov and say, how come you guys don't shout him out for being deaf? So is he partially deaf, Luke? Completely deaf? I know that... can you hear me,
Luke? Hold on, BC. I can't hear you.
Am I on the show?
I don't
anymore?
Know if that's...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Is Askarov fully deaf? Like Matt Hamill deaf? I think so.
Hello?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, BC's Zoom is messed up. So let me just give you some relevant information about this contest while we wait for BC to return. Kai Kara France, this is kind of interesting. 5 strikes landed per minute, pretty high. Strikes absorbed, 3.79. That's also a little on the high end. Askarov doesn't take nearly as much damage. It doesn't dish as much out, 3.37 landed, but just 2.65 absorbed. So a big key component of Kai Kara France is not merely going to be avoiding scrambles and avoiding takedowns, really creating separation, but you know, finding ways to get accurate strikes off, which, by the way, this is why he doesn't take a lot of damage, in part because he can deal a little bit on the feet as well, but he puts his opponents in positions where they're constantly having to, I think, throw strikes in suboptimal situations. And because they're suboptimal, they're not going to be nearly as accurate, and he might be able to have some decent defense. In fact, his striking defense, 56%, which is a little above average. It's pretty good. I will say, Kai Kara France's striking defense, 65%. Now, that is very high. So, again, on the feet, if you're Askarov here, it's not at all unwinnable, but that probably isn't the path of least resistance, right? It's probably not that. The grappling is got to be the key here. Takedown average, as I mentioned, 2.75 for Askarov, just 0.5 5-1 for Kai Kara France. Not really a threat in that way. Takedown accuracy is low, 28%, but when you just think about that, that means there's 70% of those unaccounted for. Obviously, he didn't score them, but they were all attempts either to set up strikes, cheat the distance, cut an angle, feint, fake, the whole nine. Well, it would be a fake in that case, not a feint, but you get the idea. You get the idea. Takedown defense, 64% for Askarov because I do think he's a little bit susceptible and open due to the somewhat open nature of how he competes. He's not a shutdown grappler type. He's more of a out-hustle scrambler kind of top position guy. That's a little bit more where he is. By the way, my producer says Askarov was born deaf, and through his hearing, through life, I guess, his hearing has improved. He can only hear approximately 20% of the sounds most people can. By the way, it should also be noted, I can hear 0% of the sounds that Brian Campbell makes, especially when his Zoom shits the bed. Getting back to the numbers here a little bit, as I mentioned, takedown defense for Askarov, 64%. Pretty decent for Kai Kara France, 87%. Neither is a big submission threat, both at 0.0 per 15 minutes. Would be interesting to see if that somehow gets weaved in here. Does one of them go a little bit outside of their comfort zone, a little bit outside of their previous sort of territory of what they consider, you know, high percentage attacks for them, and really kind of throw in a wild card here with a submission attempt if one is there, a guillotine or maybe something from the back or whatever. That could be kind of interesting. All right, I can hear BC now. Do we have him?
I'm here. I'm here.
What's up, BC?
I mean, you know, yeah, nobody wants to hear why I had tech issues, but I had them, Luke. It was my fault. I'm back at it. Luke, is Askarov deaf? Did I get that right?
Yeah, he's got 20%. He can hear 20% of the sounds most people can. So he's not.
That's incredible. Not fully deaf. Shout out to Matt Hamill, who had a very respectable career with the same setback there, Luke. I don't know where you're at in this preview, but I will tell you this. The best flyweight in the world is in this fight, Luke. And his name is Askar Askarov, and he's going to win this one, and then the next one, and you know, he's going to end up your flyweight champion, Luke. I think he's the most well-rounded threat. He's tough as nails, and everything that you said good about him, you're damn right. This is a great test. I think he already deserved the title shot, but he's got a historic rivalry now above him in Brandon Moreno and the new champion, the old champion, same as the old boss there with Deiveson Figueiredo. But Luke, I just can't see. I mean, I can see those odds are they're tempting because I can see Kai Kara France win this. Does he have the firepower to win this, Luke? Does he have enough firepower?
Yes, he does. He does. Mm-hmm. Okay. The firepower by itself is not enough to win. I think he would need a few other things in conjunction with it. But you're asking, does he have, you know, the kind of like round or fight altering power and accuracy to really hurt Askarov here? Yeah, sure he does. Mm-hmm.
I love this fight. Give me Askarov, okay, Luke? There it is. All right, that's what's happening. Luke, did you pick? Do you care? You don't care.
I will pick. Yes, I'll pick Askarov. I know you think I was going to pick Kai Kara France because he trains in New Zealand, but yeah. I have respect for him, but I think this might be a bridge too far.
I had respect for you by not mentioning that at all, Luke, okay? I kind of like this sloppy fight that they're going to give us, Luke, as Alexi Olenek and Beefy Latifi touch down here at heavyweight. It's largely gross and unnecessary, Luke, but your quick thoughts, very quick, on heavyweight Latifi. Very quick.
Yeah. It's yes, great. I mean, I don't have anything bad to say about it, but I don't. You know, it's not like a big, you know, editorial priority for me. Yeah, and the producers are begging us to move on.
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, it is what it is, Luke. Mark Jacasey also against Vlachislav Borshev to open what is could end up being a 6-fight main card, Luke.
Dan Yagshimuradov.
Is there any fight you are loving on the prelim card as much as I have love for Jennifer Maia replacing Jessica Eye against Manon Ferreau? Luke, this is a tough-ass matchup for your woman of French kickboxing renown, correct?
Yes, tough fight. Obviously, we know Jennifer Maia well-rounded, and again, herself, experienced in this division, great on the ground. Manon Ferreau, great on the feet, or at least, you know, has been mostly pretty good on the feet. So this card has a few of these sort of got these ladies or guys with very different ways in which they win, and we're going to have to negotiate that and see which one comes out. It's an interesting kind of coincidence. Also, Chris Gutierrez taking on Dana, or Batgirl Dana, who I think trains with Brandon Gibson over at Jackson Wink. So another, and Chris Gutierrez, I think, is out of not Elevation, but Factory X and Mark Montoya. So, like, you know, two elite teams, elite coaches. That should be another fun one as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Neil Magny, Max Payne Griffin, could end up being the featured preliminary bout. 41-year-old Sarah McMahon returning for the first time since that finish loss to Juliana Pena. She'll take on Carol Rosa. Few storylines there, Luke. Few fights that'll be interesting, so I'll be checking that out. Luke, let's keep this train wreck rolling here and go back into the police blotter of all things UFC and a couple headlines that we keep making. Luke, Wednesday's top story was certainly Jorge Masvidal, two-piece and a fractured tooth on Colby Covington at a Miami steakhouse. We're all through that, Luke. We're mostly through the moral conundrum and all of that, but news has changed a bit since then, with Covington now pressing charges, telling police that his $90,000 Rolex suffered $15,000 in damage. So, Luke, he's going full on with this, and we do know that this, what Masvidal has been charged with, can become a felony if fully convicted there. So, you know, there's no shortage of stakes here. But did we rightfully or wrongfully receive some criticism from our viewers for going, you know, I mean, it's an unfortunate situation all around, but not only did, you know, Jorge kind of announce it well in advance, that's his style, that's what he does, and Colby may or may not have had it coming. I'm seeing a lot more regular life response to that from fans going, nah, F it, at the end of the day, that's assault, brother. The guy, you know, he had his chance in the cage.
Yes.
Maybe because I look at the fight game as so, not pro wrestling necessarily, but just an alternate universe. Sometimes the life these guys live, to me, is just like this weird game, alternate universe, try to create fights out of beefs and all that, that, yeah, our fans' reaction of, holy shit, that's some shitty shit done by Jorge Masvidal, is 100% damn right. And Colby is right. The victim in this case. We're, you know, we never, you know, argued that, but you've seen a wide reaction from fighters that seems to differ from the reaction from the fans.
And what, in supporting Jorge?
Yes. There's a lot of Jorge support.
Well, dude, I mean, this is one of the situations where it's a little bit unique, and I have noticed that the fans have very much taken Colby's side. Listen, I said this yesterday, and I'll say it again here. Dude, what would you think if Colby sued him? Nothing. Dude, whoever punched him, and Jorge is, of course, alleged to have punched him, but whoever the assailant is made a very clear choice about what they wanted for their future, right? You accepted all of the things that came with it. Colby Covington is entitled to legal remedy. He absolutely is the victim, legal remedy through the criminal justice system, as well as any kind of civil suit that may be launched consequently.
Right.
And I wouldn't judge him for it even a little bit. He is absolutely entitled to all of that. My only point can be is, again, if you were trying to explain to an innocent bystander how this could have possibly happened, it's not especially confusing. What the law is and what we should tolerate in society, of course, is one conversation. And then a separate one is that has nothing to do with whether or not it will. It is absolutely true. It is absolutely true. Colby Covington is a victim. Full stop. No argument about it. Period. That is the full nature of what happened on that night in Miami. It is also true that he agitated and provoked and showed incredibly poor risk management through an act designed for self-aggrandizement. Well, dude, the bill came due on that.
Yeah.
He cannot act surprised by that, even if I fully grant that what happened to him 100% makes him a victim. It does.
Right. Like, as stupid as my explanation for that is in theory, it's true. It becomes this alternate world when you play this character publicly, that this is some of the price you pay. Just like Luke, I like to live in a safe daily world that has the kind of rules that if somebody runs up with a mask and does this type of premeditated attack, that yes, like you said about Colby, I or you or anybody would have every right to sue for damages and press full charges and all of that. But you enter that weird world, just like Luke. We all live under the same rules, but go into certain neighborhoods, I'm sure in Washington, D.C. or Hartford, Connecticut or anywhere, and they got a different set of rules, Luke, okay? They do. It's just there's no freaking questioning that. So I didn't never said any of that to glorify Masvidal. I do seem to be the only one that it thinks it's premeditated to a degree in hopes of getting bigger fights. But even that aside, Luke, it's shitty, though. But is it not shitty under street rules because Masvidal has long stood by that being his style and his way to survive? Well, I mean, this is a stupid question, Luke. It's a stupid question.
You're asking the wrong guy about what the proper etiquette is with street rules.
Is that why all the fighters are backing him, or are they only backing him because they hate Colby more?
For sure they hate Colby. So that's a big part of it. The other part is, I don't know. I can't speak for the fighters. I do think, though, it bears one thing repeating here. Listen, this is what Colby, I think, thought that the risk management side was a bit of a game, and it hadn't really cost him in person yet up until this incident. So he probably thought it just wasn't going to happen, right? What was the likelihood of him being attacked? He probably thought it was much lower than it actually was. But the thing I want to point about Jorge is, it's like, okay, here's what Colby got wrong about all of that. He went to Oregon State, and I realize he went to colleges before that, but he was a two-time All-American. Like, he went through this kind of process that a lot of, middle-income Americans get to do, right? You go to college and you graduate and you can do things after that. And he chose an unusual career path afterwards, but he had a relatively normal-ish upbringing in terms of that kind of experience. Jorge Masvidal, did he even make it to the ninth grade? He dropped out. I don't know what, if any, kind of post-secondary education he has. I don't judge him for it. Everyone has a completely different life circumstance. In fact, he made great work of himself coming from the place where, you're dropping out of high school or whatever, and then you're competing in the backyards with Kimbo Slice, and now you're headlining UFC cards, and you're a multimillionaire. This is the only point about Jorge that I feel like needs to be said as well. It's like, dude, isn't the point of getting to a place where you're making this money and you're headlining these cards and your life is a lot more comfortable than it ever was before, isn't the point of getting to that place so that you can leave the street shit behind, right? One is supposed to be the graduated departure from the other life that you didn't like for yourself and you didn't want for yourself. You wanted something more, and he did it, and he earned it every inch, every dollar he earned. You could not take any of that away from Jorge, but I just don't understand the mentality where you finally get a chance to leave that and then you bring it back against a rival in a career path where you get to fucking fist fight each other, and you just did a few. It's just bad judgment.
I guess that's why I'm so firmly in the idea of, like, no, guys, Masvidal, like, although I do believe he stands for this, that's why, again, if there was no idea at all of a second fight or pay-per-view, bonus for having done this, is he still wired like that? Yeah, of course. I believe that. But I have to believe that this was at least financially motivated for the future of getting a fight, only because if it's not, Luke, why the hell are you going to this length to prove how tough you are when, again, you just had 25 minutes against him? And now you've got a strong army of people, Luke, replying to our tweets and adding us in the comments and all that, saying, hey, Luke and Brian, how are you not mentioning that Colby actually never said anything about his kids?
Because that's irrelevant.
Jorge,
it's irrelevant.
But, like, Colby said a lot of other shit about deadbeat wives and all that, right? I mean, our deadbeat being a, like, Colby went deep enough where that's,
you have to be a third grader to think that is some kind of meaningful difference. It doesn't. Yes, would that have been even worse if he had really gone out and been like, this kid and that kid is this and that? Yes, that would have been completely awful, dude. Please, everyone out there, stop it with this nonsense. That in the end, it was just harmless talk. Yes, I agree that if you live in a dignity society, it doesn't matter what anyone says, it shouldn't affect you. But a lot of people don't live in that kind of headspace. And so the question you have to ask yourself is, did Colby sufficiently agitate enough people that over time someone decided to sock him in the face for it, whether or not he brought up a kid? That's the argument. Not like, well, in my playground, you could talk about the older kid if he's a teen, but you can't talk about the little one if it's a girl or if it's five. But if it's three, you can kind of bring, like, these stupid ass rules that only a simpleton would consider as, like, the meaningful difference. No, the dude agitated violent people and they reacted. Period. Yeah, yeah. That's the argument.
I lean more toward that, knowing there's a price to pay when playing a shtick like that, and that's what it is at the end. Luke, quickly here, but UFC has not really responded, and I don't expect them to. UFC's track record, Luke,
yeah,
obviously very controversial at times, is just a, oh, we'll let the law handle it. But I think in this case, and look, maybe it's the same case with Habib Connor. We just felt like the dolly with the window and the Habib Connor was different. I mean, it's different, Luke, but it's close, but it's different. But with that said, it's kind of like hockey in the NHL in a way where it's like, of course, I think UFC's got to like this. I know you could tell me, BC, you're crazy. It's a bad look. These are pro athletes represented on, you know, Disney-owned ESPN and blah, blah, blah. I think they kind of like this, Luke. I do.
They
tell
might.
I'm wrong.
That
tell
part, wrong. You might be. I mean, like it, I don't know. I don't. I think
wouldn't
they would
prefer
rather.
It. Wouldn't prefer it.
Wouldn't
but,
prefer it. Wouldn't prefer it, yes.
But, like, they're not cracking down saying you guys need to show up in suits on your way to the arena. You need to act something.
I mean,
you know.
Here's how you know that they don't care that much. I mean, I'm sure they're not, like, happy about it. But here's how you know. They didn't cut anybody. Right? Like, if it really bothered them, if it was like, no, fuck this guy. We cannot do business with him anymore. Forget it. You're done. Go live your life. This is not how we're going to, you know, proceed. Yeah, that would tell you that they probably had enough. No, they didn't. Business as usual.
It was the, you know, former head of the NWO, Eazy-E, there on a pro wrestling side here, Luke, that Eric Bischoff, who said, you know, controversy creates cash, Luke. Okay, so the end of the day, Luke, Jorge's gonna have to pay a lot of cash, and he's got to hope everything goes his way legally. But they're both gonna benefit from this, as will their employer. More news at 11, Luke. He wasn't the only one. Oh, sorry, quickly. Is Habib out of line with this response? I think we have the tweet to throw to. Some people argue, you know, Habib's never tweeted, and this could be Ali. You know, you could go a lot of ways with this, but here was the response of Habib of this incident. If you are stronger than someone inside the octagon, it does not mean that you can insult his children. No one has the right to insult someone's family. Once you have gone down this path, then be ready to back up your words. You were attacked by a pro fighter, the same as you are, your own size, and you go press charges against him to the police. I think all welterweights should refuse to fight Colby. Just don't accept fights with him. Let him sit without a fight. It will probably significantly affect him and all fighters who even think of insulting families, who is provoking the fighters to look for someone in restaurants to deal with him. Luke, we did see a lot of tweets from fighters going, hey, I didn't see Leon Edwards, you know, get the authorities involved. I'm not here to debate that, Luke. I'm here to hear you debate Habib's take.
I don't agree. I don't agree at all. Like, dude, I don't want to live in a world where people think that because I or anyone else said something that another person doesn't like, another person can go and sock them in the face for it. I think we can all agree that, you know, it, certainly at a bare minimum, Colby made a dedicated effort to be as indecent as you know, a person probably could. Again, there's, I guess, suppose other limits he could have gone to. But, you know, he was trying to fuck with people pretty hardcore. And so I understand that, you know, that's going to agitate people if you do that. So I understand that. But that doesn't mean I then secondarily follow that up with, well, I guess we should live in a world where, you know, if someone doesn't like something you say, they can fucking punch you in the face for it. No, that's barbaric. And don't agree at all.
The fans backed Kobe, though. The fans backed Kobe big in this debate.
Dude, he is the victim. I'm sorry. Like, what?
I mean, he is.
Just ask yourself, what did Colby say as awful as it? He said many awful things.
Yeah.
What did he say that was legally actionable? Nothing.
Right. Like,
nothing.
Again, in regular life, I'm not supporting any of this. This ain't regular life to me. It's a little different. Like, you know, like, Luke, when I get into, you know, dust ups on the basketball court, I always think you leave it in that court, though, Luke, you know? As long as I didn't cross a line with my mouth, we leave it in that court, right?
Right. I understand that. But again, it also just bears repeating, like, people, like, yes. This is what I mean, like, people who speak out on principled stances and then bad things happen to them, you know, that's one thing. But, like, you know, knowingly agitating against people for self-aggrandizement and doing it in very questionable ways, even if he may or may not have said anything specifically about the children, seems somewhat irrelevant. You also have to weigh the pros and cons of that. Because, dude, tons of people... We should say this. Tons of people have agitated and haven't had the record of having people run up on him like Colby has. I think people should reflect on why that has happened or not.
Luke, if I went through with it, or maybe it's more like when I go through with it, and attempt the rear naked choke to force you in that same, you know, tap or nap, bitch moment, and I do, because of your stubbornness, put you to sleep, when you wake up, would you sue me?
When you wake up from that dream that you're having, you let me know.
Okay. You know, I wonder that sometimes, Luke. I do wonder that, you know.
Yeah, you should leave it there. You should leave it as, you know, I wonder. Yeah.
You know, I am wonder. Luke, your buddy Conor McGregor arrested again, this time in
my
West
best friend.
Dublin.
We hang out all the time.
Pulled over, and his vehicle was seized, charged with dangerous driving charges, Luke. He was driving a Bentley Continental worth $187,000. If convicted here, it's a hefty financial penalty and up to 6 months in prison. Luke, is this a wake-up call, or is this just, you know, the price of being famous, Luke?
Yeah, it's the price of being famous. They actually have video of it. It's like two guys were driving in Ireland on the highway. They spot McGregor, who had the top down on his car, or looked like it anyway. And they kept saying, up the Mac, you know, like big ups to him or whatever. And he was shouting back at him, so he was loving it. And I don't know if he had done something before that or he was doing something during the middle of that, but then the cops flag him, you know. I mean, listen, they said he passed sobriety tests, which frankly to me is the more important infringement. But, you know, we'll also say this. We got Errol Spence Jr. coming back, and he had the retina surgery, which is what prevented the Pacquiao fight and everything else. But before that, he had his Porsche or whatever it was being flung into the air because he just wasn't reacting, or, you know, he just wasn't being a good driver. And there was more to the story than that, obviously. I'm just saying...
Yeah,
you know, is this the biggest scandal? No, but I would prefer him to not being getting pulled over and arrested for driving like a maniac.
While Connor has had too many arrests, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, and there's always controversy swirling around him, this doesn't scream as, you know, scary or ridiculous. In 2017, he paid a $440 fine for speeding, and then in 2018, Luke, he had his license revoked, and he faced a huge fine when he got pulled over doing 154 kilometers in a 100. So, you know, when you're a risk-taking pro athlete, like, you know, did you expect Lawrence Taylor to do anything? For the style he played on the field for the Giants, could he be anything than what he was off of it, Luke? Just a full-on, just, you know, get after it in the personal life, in the nightclub scene, Luke? Driving sports cars at ridiculous speeds. I mean, our favorite rock stars, our favorite action heroes, we almost expect that. I ain't saying it's a safe thing, though.
No, it's not. You know, in Florida, they don't make anyone who's driving a motorcycle or a Vespa wear a helmet. Boy, they don't give a fuck down there, huh?
Well, they don't want to be told, Luke. Anything.
I see that.
Okay, so
yeah, it's just like, hey, you know, we just don't mind dying. Like, it's just a thing that we do every day more than most. It's great.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay.
Luke, we've got Nate Diaz making a lot of noise about both Conor McGregor, Jorge Masvidal, and then Dustin Poirier jumping in. We have some tweets to throw to you. I don't expect you to care necessarily that he's jawing back and forth with Conor of who submitted who and who should play who in a movie, because Jared Leto got involved and said he'd love to play McGregor. But again, I ask you, as we run through these and look at it, why the hell is Nate Diaz versus Dustin Poirier not been freaking booked already? Like, what the look? I can only conspiracy, you know, web together a lot of ideas, because why the hell is this not happening?
But he ain't capable now or this year. Okay. Incapable ass. Been trying to fight for 7 months, UFC. Let's fucking go.
Don't forget that Nate tweeted about wanting to fight for Bellator on the Hawaii card, Luke, as well.
Yes. All UFC fighters need to stop getting arrested for stupid shit. You're acting like animals, irresponsible little kids. Get your shit together. Drive safe, please, and act right. Fuck.
Luke, would you have survived being raised in Stockton? Do you think you could have? I mean, you did the Marine thing.
You know, I survive maybe. Happily. not that I've known what that's like at all throughout 42 years of life, but probably Luke, whatever I've experienced would be even less.
Okay, should we be concerned about this Diaz-Poirier thing, or is it you just think they're kind of waiting and plugging it in on a large card in the fall or something?
Yeah, I think they're trying to figure out their calendar, and then they haven't done that yet. That's what I think, because they're very meticulous about their planning. How many shows, where are they going to be, who's going to be on them, what belts need to be in rotation with who. You know, they're very good about that. So I tend to think that's probably what the holdup is.
Oh, I think I'm reading potential quick hitters here, Luke, off the wrong list. I think I copy and pasted on my list.
I'm glad you're so dialed in for today's show as host that we don't have these problems.
So maybe I'll talk about that other thing later. All right, Luke. Topic three is One Championship is going to have their anniversary card called 1X, signifying 10 years making rap tunes, Luke, ever since Honeys was wearing Sassoon. For Chatri, Sid Young Tong and company, Luke, it's a big celebration. There will be it's almost like three cards in one across multi different, of course, disciplines, MMA, kickboxing, Muay Thai, all that, Luke. But the main reason for us U.S. MMA fans to be pumped up is that co-main event when Demetrius Johnson does the multi-rules, mixed rules fight against the kickboxing sensation Rod Tang. Luke, he's a savage. He's an action fighter. This is creative. This is fun. We nailed all that already. What the hell does this actually look like? And how much does DJ, after that loss, Luke, re-examine, you know, which direction in his career he's going, Luke? I gave you a lot.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those fights where, you know, what does the result mean? You never really know, because if DJ goes out there during the MMA round and chokes him out, then who cares? Or maybe that doesn't happen, he gets knocked out. Or it doesn't happen, but then he's actually, like, pretty competitive on the feet or whatever. You know, who knows what it'll look like. It's like when you have the, you know, like, when a boxer fights an MMA fighter, it's like, well, whatever round that happens and is the likeliest outcome. Now, it is true that, who was it? I forget the guy's name. It was a Japanese guy who fought Shinya Aoki, who was a kickboxer. Jianso, I forget, was it Yamaguchi was his name or something like that. Anyway, and he survived on the ground and then kneed Shinya Aoki in the stand-up round, which, you know, again, sort of is one of the more plausible outcomes you're going to get. I tend to think that what this fight signifies is that it's fun, could be kind of interesting. One guy might outperform expectations in the side of the game that they're not in their best. But in general, like, however it goes, you'll probably be like, oh, right, it was always going to go, you know, in one of these likely scenarios.
Are they fighting until a stoppage? Or I know there's two rounds that are MMA, two that are, what is it, Muay Thai or kickboxing?
I think Muay Thai. I'm not sure.
And then do they go to a fifth if it's deemed a draw? There's probably something funky in there. It'll be fun to watch, Luke, just the same. The guy that did beat Demetrius Johnson to defend his one flyweight title is also on this card. Adriano Moraes, he'll be taking on Yuya Wakamatsu. Luke, that main event is a lot of people talking, even stateside, about Angela Lee defending her atomweight title against Stamp Fairtex. Are we sleeping a bit on Angela Lee when we rightfully criticize one for its, you know, financial claims and all that, and ratings claims?
What do you mean? I mean, like, she doesn't deserve praise?
Should we be talking about her more? And we don't, because one's got a little stigma on it.
Well, the other part is that she doesn't have a ton of fights. She has lost two of her last three. So I think that might be part of it as well. And now one
but
of them
she was going
to,
out of her, wasn't she daring to be great in a way?
Yes, and so two things. One, she got the revenge in one of the fights. The other one was Michelle Nicolini, who was like, Michelle Nicolini scored the most gruesome armbar I've ever seen of all armbars anywhere. It was when she took, I forget who she did it against. Maybe it was Mikey Musumeci's sister. And she pulled the arm, and it wasn't this. It's that she took this arm and bent it all the way across her own back. I'd never even seen anything like that, and it was the most gruesome thing ever. So losing to her is not the biggest deal in the world. But to the point, I think that has somewhat dimmed the relevant North American media from covering her more.
Yeah, that's fair. She'll be main eventing this whole event, which is going to have a 7-fight main card called the Grand Finale that kicks off 8 a.m. Eastern on Saturday morning, Luke. Or is it Sunday morning? I'm not even sure. I think it's Saturday morning. But Shinya Aoki is going to have a fun old guy fight with Sexayama. And Ed Furlong, Luke, is going to, from Terminator 2, is going to take on John Wei Parr in a Muay Thai bout. And plenty of kickboxing champions who I could never pronounce their names. But one is going to have its moment with 1X, Luke. Look, you got to check it out. Mighty Mouse in this weird fight, you got to check it out. All right, Luke, quickly, boxing this weekend. We went hard Wednesday on Tim Zhu's Showtime debut, U.S. debut. Both will take place in Minneapolis at the Armory Saturday night. Terrell Gaucher, the opponent for Tim Zhu. And this is the first of the spring-summer schedule for Showtime, Luke, and it's a good triple header. We talked about son of a Hall of Famer and all that stuff. Let's talk turkey in the ring. Tim Zhu has shown a lot, Luke, but it's been on the domestic level. This is the perfect step up in my eyes against Gaucher, who can counter fight effectively, great technique, and is coming off a big knockout, second round stoppage of Jermonte Clark, which offsets the criticism you normally hear from Gaucher surrounding him of he's skilled, but he's a little too passive, doesn't let his hands go enough. I think he's trying to resurrect that, Luke. Is this a fool's gold fight? I mean, a trap fight here for Tim Zhu. Is he walking into something, Luke? Or are we going to see the next at 154 take that one step closer?
I don't know what to expect from him. I know you've been high. I watched the Jeff Horn fight. He looked pretty good in that one, to your point. Like, he actually looked really good in that fight. I tend to think he should beat Terrell Gaucher, who I think is a good, if flawed, fighter. Right? I think that's maybe a fairish way to put it. Here's what I want to ask you, though. I have noticed that when you say to me, and I don't find it all that controversial, but when you say to me, like, oh, he did a lot of stuff domestically, but now he's in the big leagues, a lot of the people in Australia are like, hey, fuck off, bro, like, or mate, because what he did here was actually pretty important, not just from the box office perspective, because he's been on pay-per-view there for a while, but he actually beat some good names in here and showed some great ability, and it's you fucking assholes who didn't recognize George Kambosos was any good, because y'all are some haters in North America. What about that?
Okay, so what that means is, and shout out to, you know, shout out to Australian boxing, just like we're shouting out the explosively ridiculous rise in the UK and Ireland at the moment, is now y'all finally got a good, you know, amateur system and feeding system to create this type of run now. Have things changed for good in boxing in that regard, that they're consistently putting out world-class fighters? Not completely, but there's momentum right now. So I get that nobody wants to be insulted. But as things have gone in the modern time in boxing, you got to prove it in Las Vegas on the pay-per-view level, you know, against the American champion of the moment or the champion from Europe, you know, or fighting in America, whoever. You get my point. But this is a big one, though. This guy has potential to be the best boxer in this country's, you know, history, Luke. And this country's had a few, you know, legends for sure. But he's coming on, Luke. And if you look at the odds here, and we've talked about why he's so good and why Gaucher is a tough test, but unless Gaucher really lets his hands go and gets to another level, it's certainly a passable test. The betting odds, though, Luke, which tend to be wider in these big boxing fights than the MMA ones, minus 1,100, Tim Zhu on DraftKings, your favorite.
Jesus.
Plus 650, Gaucher. So they're Vegas giving young Zhu a ton of respect. But Luke, how is he going to do it? It's going to be behind that big jab.
Yep.
It's going to be a consistent body attack because that's what he does. But I think if Terrell Gaucher gets too reckless or too offensive, Zhu's too schooled, poised, and can time him, and I think he can get him out of there. So there's going to have to be a dance Gaucher is going to have to do, meaning he's going to have to really control the terms and pace of the fight, Luke. But he's going to have to be offensive enough to take, you know, to take the shifter away from Zhu. I don't know if he can do that. That's the real question for me, Luke, because be more offensive. You're going to have to take over the terms of this fight.
That's right. Erickson Lubin is showing you here a little bit of what I expect from Tim Zhu. Not so much the center of the ring. I think Tim Zhu is going to push him back with that big jab, as you mentioned, and really begin to go, you know, probably do more volume. I would say. I don't know if Gaucher is the bigger slickster. I think Gaucher is going to try to be the bigger slickster in this one. And I think the guy with the better fundamentals and the better punching power, which I think is Zhu, is going to get it done. But the point I'm trying to make here is, BC, I think behind that jab, you're going to see a lot. And I think you're going to see Gaucher. How soon, I don't know. But eventually, I think that stoppage is going to happen along the ropes. I think Tim Zhu is going to really press physically into him and make him fight along the rope, the ropes itself and then the rope line. And I think he's going to get picked off from there. So does it get stopped? I don't know, but I'm expecting big damage late.
If Zhu is as good as we think he is...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
These are the type of these are the only types of fighters that Gaethje really loses to. So, you know, he lost to Erickson Lubin, he lost to Ruslandi Lara in a title bout, he had a draw with Austin Trout. That's the type of level. So I think Zhu will do it. And this is a look, if he can get a stoppage, it's a statement. It's a statement. You know, I don't know if he can get the winner of Castaño Charlo 2 right away, but you know, let's watch his rise if he can win this one and continue on in the States and Showtime. And yes, so I got the time limit coming here, Luke, the end of the tunnel. We're going to get through this in time. But this is a triple header Saturday night for Showtime. And this co-main event, I don't want anybody to sleep on. Michelle Rivera is an unbeaten lightweight who is putting something nicely together there. We don't talk about him with all of those young lightweights maybe as much as we should. He fashions himself a young Cassius Clay and models and dresses just like a young Muhammad Ali. His game isn't nearly as good, no disrespect, Luke, but he is a talented guy on the come up. What I love is what this test is. Joseph Adorno, Luke, just 2-3 fights ago was an unbeaten top-ranked prospect from Puerto Rico, a puncher, a guy who goes after it. And then he has back-to-back draws that were somewhat disappointing. Now it seems like he's on the open market, and this is a tough out for Michelle Rivera. They know each other. They've sparred in the past. So I'm really hoping people will circle on this co-main event, Luke, because Rivera has looked special, but this is going to be a tough fight.
I will take you at your word. I frankly would be lying if I said I knew a lot about either fighter, but certainly to just remind the folks at home, Tim Zhu and Terrell Gaethje is the main event for a reason, but it's certainly not the only event.
Yep, so that triple header, Elvis Rodriguez returns as well. Luke, quickly, ESPN's going to give us Miguel Burchelt against Jeremiah Nakatia, and here's why this is interesting. Burchelt has not fallen.
You love this fight.
I do, because Burchelt was the boogeyman at 130 until Oscar Valdez moved up and knocked him out in that sensational fight over a year ago. Burchelt is now finally making his comeback. He's moving up, though, to 135, and he's taking on Nakatia, who lost to Shakur Stevenson in his biggest step up, but he has legit power, and he made Stevenson, to be fair, Luke, circle away from that power pretty much the entire second half of that. This is a good test to see where Burchelt is. He's got a new trainer. He's got a new outlook. He took a legitimate break off. If he wins this, Luke, he's a fun B-side, but he's a fun out at 135 with all these other big names there. I mean, he can make some big, fun fights.
What's the biggest one? Let's say he gets the spectacular win. What do you think is a likely big fight that could potentially materialize this year for him?
Politics plays a big part because, you know, he fights for Top Rank there on ESPN. But, you know, we do have, Shakur Stevenson's fighting Oscar Valdez in a freaking amazing fight. Could the winner of that be a great fight at 135 against Burchell? Yes. It looks like Teofimo's moving out so up to 140, so that isn't a lane or an angle right now for him. But Lomachenko's going to need an opponent when he does come back. These are the type of fights that would be great. Everyone wanted Lomachenko versus Burchell at 130. Never happened, Luke. This would be great to see those two against each other. So check out that one. DAZN's also going to give us a very interesting rematch. Kiko Martinez, the 35-year-old who had the upset knockout win to become champion late in his career, is going to take on Josh Warrington a second time from their decision back in 2017. And Luke, Eric Morales and Orlando Salido, the two old Mexican legends, retired, are going to do a 6-round exhibition bout from somewhere in Texas, and it's going to air on Fight TV. It's going to be 154 pounds, and I love both of these two action heroes, and they're probably going to end up thinking it's real and go after it, and so that could be fun. But Luke, should be worried that James Vick is going to be boxing on that undercard at 168 pounds. against Simon Alejandro Heredia Cortez, who is a 38-year-old with a 0-1 professional record.
No. See, here's the thing. If James Vick was like really trying to go, like, you know, make something of himself in boxing, which I think would be very difficult to do, given the circumstances, that would be one thing. But it sounds like he just wants to compete and test himself a little bit, a la, you know, not quite as nimbly as Jim Miller or Matt Brown. But, you know, if you're fighting a guy who's 0-1, 38, how much are you really risking? It's not, you know, for a professional fighter, it's not that risky, all things considered. You know, you don't want to diminish the threat per se, but I don't have a big problem with that at all. I think a guy should be allowed to do something like that.
All right. All right. Quickly here, Luke, to get out, we got a couple quick hitters. Paige VanZant is going to be back in the BKFC cage or ring or however you want to call it. But it's BKFC's first move to London, July 9th. No opponent announced, but it's going to take place at Alexandra Palace. Luke, it looked like she was going the pro wrestling route. She signed with AEW. Then she's telling everyone she's going to be back in MMA before you know it. This is a little bit of a surprise. I don't think you care, though.
I do agree that it's surprising. I wonder where this ultimately will head to AEW, Bellator, PFL. I don't really know what it all means, but
yes,
I agree with you. That's something worth paying attention to because it does seem like there's something there. I still wonder if BKFC is the best fit, but maybe they're paying her a ton, and maybe it is.
Gable Stevenson, excuse me, after his second
Stevenson
after his second straight NCAA championship there at. What is he, super heavyweight or heavyweight, Luke? Is there such a thing in college?
You are the heavyweight. Up to 285 is what they have, okay. I believe.
He talked with Ariel, Luke, and he's really not, as much as he's headed right to WrestleMania, he says, expect to see him on the broadcast coming up and then expects to go full on into that world. He's not ruling out the MMA thing, Luke. It's one thing to tease it, though, but he sounds hungry like he's going to take that bite. So, could he be one of these sort of freak celebrities who are like, I just want to come in for one big fun fight, whoever's the biggest bidder?
Yeah, he could. That kid, he should be able to, until he's 30 at least, he should be able to be calling a lot of shots, a lot of them. Freak athlete, amazing wrestler, dynamic personality, loves to be a showman, and is good at it. He should not be under anyone's onerous contract, right? That if yeah. if he can't get a good deal for himself in this world, nobody can. You know, that's just the reality.
It's going to be fun to see. Daniel Cormier this week on his DC and RC show, Luke said that he thinks if Gable went full time, that he could become a heavyweight champion in this game. Like he sees it in him. We all see a lot of athleticism, and I know that Brock Lesnar was crazy congratulatory after Gable won the NCAAs, Luke, and you have to think they're going to, I know it's not enough to get you back in. Like Stone Cold coming back at this WrestleMania for that skit thing they're going to do, Luke, I don't think that's enough to get you back in. Could I get you in for Gable versus Brock doing like a WrestleMania program?
No, why would I care about pro wrestling?
I just wanted to know your limits, Luke, okay? I know your personal limits. I've been there, Luke, okay?
My limits are, is there pro wrestling on the screen? Please change it. That's my limit.
You want this or American Gladiators? Gladiators, yeah.
Yes, you could put on violent pornography, something that's got some redeeming value, but
we don't talk about that on this show. Luke, real quick here, a couple of that Bellator news. Benson Henderson resigns with the promotion, and he's going to be in a headlining role on an upcoming Dublin card against Peter Queeley. Okay.
That's a good fight for him, actually. Yeah. I like that. Dude, these guys who are a little bit older, they got a little bit of name left, they got a little bit of ability left, not trying to like deny them. So if I can go and beat the best, please stop. No, you can't. But that doesn't mean you can't beat, some good, respectable name opposition, especially in Ireland, where he comes out, and it's one of the best walkouts in all of MMA, that one he had with Zombie and the Cranberries. It was fucking unbelievable. So, yeah, great. Love it. Glad to hear it. Good.
The other bit of Bellator news, in addition to what we had already talked about with Sergio Pettis, the champion pulling out of the Grand Prix. Now we have an interim title fight with Rafion Stotts and the former champ Archuleta. But Luke, James Gallagher, unfortunately out as well. I know you were part of reacting to that breaking news on CBS Sports HQ yesterday. It looks like the result from Bellator is instead of announcing one alternate or two alternates to fill these two holes, we're going to get what? Is it three or is it two or four play-in matches to produce
four fighters, two fights. On one side, it's Jornel Lugo taking on Sabatello. Winner of that, I believe, will fight Leandro Ego. On the other side, it's Enrique Barzola taking on Josh Hill. Now, Josh Hill was originally named as the only tournament replacement, but I guess the problem was when you lose a couple of your folks, including the champion, for crying out loud, you have to kind of play with this a little bit. So he will take on, it would be Hill and Barzola, which, by the way, is a great fight. But I got to tell you, that Lugo-Sabatello fight, dude, Sabatello is a fucking hammer. And I think that's an ATT versus Sanford fight as well. I think Sabatello just beat, who's the kid out of Wales, who was in the UFC, Brett Johns, I believe he beat him. And dude, he's good.
He might
get some big fights.
I like the stakes that it adds to a couple extra fights that you may not have paid attention to with that level of focus now, because we got these play-in opportunities. I don't know if I love it for the NBA playoffs, Luke. You know, we'll have to experience that a few years and see if it hits at all.
They do it in big time European soccer. They might do it in MLS. I don't really watch that much MLS, but like they have, you know, the FA Cup in the Premier League, right? So it's this little tournament within the season. In soccer, it works just fine for me, but we'll see how the NBA fans take to it.
Luke, quickly to close on the quick hitters, PFL is going to kick off their new season April 20th. It's a Wednesday night on ESPN. Main event, the 155 champ Rosh Manfio taking on Don Mage or Madge.
That's a sick fight.
Yeah, and Anthony Pettis in the co-main is going to take on Miles Price, nicknamed Magic, who's a Irish kid from making his PFL debut that some people have said can do some things, Luke. Screwface Jr. there against Dellen Monte, and Clay Collard against Jeremy Stevens to kick that card off.
What a great fight that is.
Yeah,
By the way, that Roush Manfio guy, I believe he won the whole season, but he certainly beat Anthony Pettis. And Don Madge, man, I've been talking about Don Madge. This guy went undefeated in the UFC. I guess there must have been some visa issues. I don't know why they let him go or what happened there. He never lost in the UFC. I think he had two fights, and he won them both pretty spectacularly. Dude, he's from South Africa. That fucking kid is good, very good, especially on the feet. Now, he's got a difficult opponent in front of him, but, like, everybody should be keeping an eye, corner of your eye, keep an eye out for Don Madge. That guy can fight.
Yeah, I like that first card. So PFL won me. They won me last year, Luke. I like a Wednesday night card here, too. I don't hate that at all.
I love the Wednesday night cards. Yeah, I love them.
All right, Luke, that's right. But some things we say in the microphone each week are not only wrong, Luke. MorningCombat@gmail.com allows the people to tell us whether we are actually dead wrong. So let's take a chance on these L's, see if we'll squat for them. This one's called Dead Wrong. Okay, on Friday's March 18th show, Brian talked about how John Jones's first main event in the UFC came against the janitor, Vladimir Matyshenko. He's dead wrong, though. John's first main event actually came against Brandon Vera in the fight before that. Love the show. Listen to every episode. Only episode I couldn't finish was Luke's live chat a few weeks ago in the new spot.
Yeah. Yeah. It had some issues. But I was going to say that Vera fight was big because Vera was the first guy who was like, I'm going to win two titles in light heavyweight and heavyweight.
Yeah.
And he had some great success, had a little bit of trouble. And then John absolutely buried that idea if there ever had any life left.
Didn't they screw Vera on the cards against Randy Couture as well, Luke?
It was a close one. I don't know if they screwed him, but it was definitely pretty close. It was pretty close.
All right, dead wrong number two. Hey, Donks, this is Eloy. During Monday's show, you were discussing where this past weekend's card, UFC London, ranked among all fight nights. Luke brought up the first Fox card with JDS KOing Velasquez and also said that Benson Henderson fought Jim Miller.
Oh, yes. You're dead wrong because
Bendo fought Clay Guida.
Clay Guida, yeah. Someone wrote me in the middle of the week being like, you're going to get dead wronged on Friday. Fair enough.
Also, what did those Argentinians say at the pool that made you think we are racist? Saludos, Desde.
I'll tell you what they said. And people in South America look the other way on this, but to me it's fucked up, and I don't give a shit what the culture is. They summoned him over to him to get them drinks by referencing his skin color. That's what they said to him. Which I thought was, and people excuse this shit down there. I'm telling you, they'll be like, that's just how we talk down here. Fuck that. That's how y'all talk down there because when you're fucking racist. You do not summon a working class person over to you to get you drinks by referring to his skin color. Fuck off. I don't want to hear that
I'm not endorsing that at all, Luke. I don't know where you're going with this.
I'm telling you, I bring it up to other people who are here who are from South America, and they're always like, well, that's kind of how we talk. We don't mean it the same way. Get the fuck out of here. I don't believe that for 2 seconds.
This is from Jordan, who lives in Hawaii. On episode 279, in discussing Dan Hooker's previous losses, LT mentions Makhachev, Allen Felder, and Poirier. Not sure if I misunderstood, Luke. He may have been referencing the battles that Hooker has fought as opposed to the losses, but he seems to think that Dan Hooker lost to Paul Felder when, in fact, it was a split decision win
for
Hooker.
Although it was a controversial split decision. Let's put it that way.
Mahalo for all of the awesome content. Thank you, Jordan.
Yes.
But you think they call him Air Jordan, Luke, in Hawaii?
I don't know. I don't know.
Finally, Luke, because I'm about to get a UTI if I don't find a restroom shortly. on Wednesday's episode, when Luke and Brian were discussing the Zoo-Gaucher fight, Brian referred to episode one of Star Wars and measuring levels, which Luke referred to mitochondria levels. I think what you're referring to is midichlorians.
Midichlorian. Mitochondria is real.
Which are intelligent.
It's the powerhouse of the cell, right? Don't you remember that from ninth grade biology?
Yeah. Golly. Mitochondria, as you may remember from biology, are the powerhouse of the cell.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, I got to pee my pants. Thank you, fans.
This show was terrible. It was a terrible show today.
It was low T, but I don't know about terrible. Terrible, Luke? Really? Terrible?
It wasn't great. It was not our best effort.
I mean, you know, we had just come off last week of the best shows we've ever done, Luke. So,
I've got some combo of Ebola and AIDS like coursing through my veins right now. So
yeah, that's probably true. All right. Thank you to Athletic Greens, one of our fine sponsors, Luke. And please, you can go to athleticgreens.com/morningcombat, combat with a K, of course, to get your start in AG1, Luke. Okay. So that's what I'm talking about.
I'm going to take some right after the show.
The free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and the 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Tell them BC sent you. Okay, Luke, showtime.com, 30 days. People know that shit as well. Morningcombat.store, like and subscribe. That's about all I got, Luke. Can you take him out of here? Thank you.
For Malka, CBS Sports, the big beige one himself, I'm Luke Thomas. I'll see y'all on Monday. And until then, may all of your gains be loyal.